Going to talk here to an icon of the 60s, poet, guitarist, singer, songwriter, well known for his great songs and lyrics, Colors, Catch the Wind, Sunshine Superman, Jennifer Juniper, and he's now back on tour live, and welcome to Donovan.
Well, hello there, Michael. A very nice introduction. And I just wanted to say straight away, I live close by, as you know, to where I'll be doing the performance in Ballycotton. But I particularly wanted to say hello to some locals around Ballycotton, and now I get a chance.
You certainly are, and you're not a stranger to these parts, because I saw you in concert in Middleton, I think, about maybe 15 years ago.
Oh my goodness! Well, you know, remembering it exactly would take about 4 minutes for me to remember. I was just joking.
Right. Well, you talked about local in Ballycotton here in Cork. I'd like to say huge congratulations to you and your artist wife Linda on recently being made honorary Cork people. What's the feel like to be presented with the unique Republic of Cork passport at the annual Cork Persons of the Year Awards there recently?
Well, yeah, I guess Linda and I got the passport, and now that's very, very keen to have. I'm not quite sure what it gets us. Perhaps we could get the keys to the City of Cork one day, and we could open any door.
It's the keys to the Corky accent at some stage, maybe, as well.
I'm from Glasgow. I had two Irish grannies, you know, a Kelly and an O'Brien. The name Donovan, you know, it's my first name. You know, it's not my last name.
I see that.
But, you know, the O'Donovans are in the West, of course. But I'm not part of the clan. But it's an interesting game, thinking, where did my father get the name Donovan? He knew it was a last Irish name. But he wanted a D, you see, because he was Donald. But he was very well read, as a lot of the Gaelic, Irish, Scots and Welsh were very well read, you know. And he wanted a D, but he didn't want Donald, and he didn't want Dermot, and he didn't want Douglas, and he didn't want... He wanted a D, but he was looking, and he knew I was going to be a boy up there in Glasgow 1 year after that terrible Second World War. It was finally over. I'm born, and when I'm born, he's a boy, of course. So here's the story, if you want to hear it. He goes down to the registrar office to register my name, and he says the wee register, he was a what we call a short ass, he's like only about 4'5" high, and you got to watch these wee guys, my dad said, because they jump up and give you the heed. You know what that means?
I don't know.
Oh yeah, what they lack in height, some of the guys in Glasgow, they could leap up in the air and give you one right on the forehead, with their own forehead. So my dad is a bit wary, and the wee register said, "Congratulations, Mr. Leach. What's your son's name?" And my father told me how he got the name. He was waiting for me to be born. I was so nervous. He went to the movie house in Glasgow. My mother was about to drop me. He went into the movie house, and it was a cowboy movie, he said later. And there he was in the cinema, and into the bar comes the sheriff, and goes right up to the bar. Sitting at the bar was the outlaw, and the sheriff says, "Okay, Donovan, draw." And my dad said, "That was it. Eureka. I'm going to call my son Donovan." So he's down the registrar, and the wee registrar said, "What's your boy's name?" And he said, "My son's name's Donovan." And the registrar said, "You can't have that. That's an Irish last name." And my dad looks at him and he says, "But I want to." And the registrar said, "Well, you can't have it. Choose another." So my dad said, "A bit of a problem here, son. So I just happen to have," my dad said, "a quarter gill of best Scotch whiskey in my back pocket, because I was working down the distillery at the time, and we were going dancing later." So he takes out the quarter gill, he puts it on the registrar's counter, and he says, "Would that convince you?" And the wee register looks up the corridor, he looks down the corridor, pockets the wee quarter gill and says, "Congratulations, your son's name Donovan." Now, I go round the long way to tell you this, because my name has been lucky for a long while, but how would I know that I'd love this part of the world, and the O'Donovans would be everywhere in the West.
Well, Donovan, speaking of names, back in 1979, there was a famous dude arrived on our shores. He was Pope John Paul II. He visited Ireland in 1979. And since then, there's a load of John Pauls named around to the stations since that time. Did you know, I was mentioning to a lady friend of mine during the week, I'm going to be talking to Donovan. And she said, what? She said, I named my daughter Jennifer, she said, after Jennifer Juniper, after your famous song Jennifer Juniper. So there's a lot of Jennifer us out there now being called after your song.
I'm fond of titles for my songs: Mellow Yellow, Sunshine Superman, Jennifer Juniper, Hurdy Gurdy Man, catchphrases really. I fell in love with popular culture, but I come deeply from the folk tradition of the Irish and Scots in Glasgow, but also my grannies go all the way back to Ireland. And so Linda and I found home here in Ireland over the years. When we drove into Cork, when we were staying up there in Dublin a few times, we went into the country, and up one Cork Lane one summer, the sheep were blocking the lane, and this handsome curly-haired shepherd was smiling and saying, "Just wait a minute, I'll get them into the field soon." And Linda and I looked at each other and said, "A spell is cast. I love this area." And so we loved Cork right away. And so that's where, I guess, after a while, we've become honorary Corkonians, which includes an old friend, now Sir David Putnam, lives in the west of Cork, of course, great film producer. He actually chose me to be the Pied Piper in his second movie. I did one acting job. And then there's the other actor who's a Corkonian, and that's Jeremy Irons. I haven't been to his castle yet, but I know friends who have been. And now Jeremy, I met him once at a fundraiser in a beautiful theatre in Richmond. That's right, the refurbished Richmond Theatre. And he was doing a poetry of Betjeman, and I was singing a Betjeman song. And we had a chat, and Jeremy said, "You know how I began?" I said, "How did you begin, Jeremy?" He said, "I was a busker singing your songs in the street." And I said, "A lot of people have said that to me. They began, even in acting. My songs they're very dramatic and funny and comedic, and they have a story. And the story is very broken down very quickly into maybe 3 minutes. Can be a whole story. A whole extraordinary story, not just a falling in and out of love, but when I arrived, I brought with me that great Gaelic talent of putting social issues into a shape in a song that is easy to listen to, but hard to forget. And that's what I do. So when I do the Ballycotton, which is so pleasing to me, we just went on sale with John there, and it sold out. So I'm very happy to be coming. Will you be getting a chance to come down yourself?
Well, Donovan, you're back live on tour again, I see. And is this a way that after you got the accolade for, and Linda, your wife, for Cork Person of the Year, is this your way of saying thank you, because you're going to be playing live in concert at the Sea Church in Ballycotton in East Cork on Sunday the 1st of May? Is this your way of saying thank you to the people of Cork?
Well, in particular, this is thanking the mayor. Two mayors were there, and thanking all the other people who were getting an award for me being last, being considered part of those that have meant something and continue to add to the good feeling in the world, from Cork to everywhere. And so as soon as we got it, I said, "Look, first, if I'm going to go back to perform, I would like to perform somewhere really small." So I phoned up my Irish agent, Madeline Seiler of the Headline Agency. I said, "Look, I want it small. I want something." And she said, "There's this beautiful thing called Sea Church down near Yule, and I haven't been down that way often. I usually go the other way to the west, you know, but I have been to Yule, and I love fishing villages and all that wonderful feeling." I said, "If there's something you get to thank the in a way symbolically thank the local people rather than just the mayor, who had his regalia on and thanked me in front of the cameras. I wanted to do a little gig. And then Madeline said, wait, you'll be surprised, you'll be pleased. There's a beautiful little thing called Sea Church. And that's how it happened. But then, of course, I said, I also would like to thank the Cork City. And I've always loved the Everyman. And so that's on the list now, May 29. But it's my birthday month in May. And this is very good for me to be performing in a birthday month. And so I'm looking forward to it.
But you're also on the Everyman in Cork on Sunday, the 29th of May. So that's going to be sold out pretty fast as well, I'd imagine.
Well, I've always loved the little Everyman. It's so beautiful. And it went through all the problems that all theatres went through in the last 2.5 years. And I've always supported, even when I was on four continents of the world, I'd say, make sure I play in a small Victorian theatre that's been saved by people that really love their theatre. And so it was an obvious choice. I'd love to play the Everyman. And then, of course, everybody is now back to work, Michael. The live performances in the world are back to back. And that's good, because that was a lot of trauma, especially for live musicians. Yeah. That was their bread and butter.
Yeah, it was indeed. The musicians and the artists world were really hit bad. Can I just go back to the early years in the 60s, the music, the culture, the protest songs, that iconic decade. What was it like growing up in the streets of Glasgow when you were young? How did people in the street where you live influenced you?
Well, growing up with the parties in the late 40s and in the first half of the 50s in Glasgow, with Irish and Scots in the room, the radio hadn't taken over completely. Radios were turned off at one point. TV hadn't arrived. Everybody was singing their own songs. My influences were thick with the Irish and the Scots folk, what we would call folk music now. But the mother, Winifred, and her sisters would also sing that King Cole and Frank Sinatra, but they sang them a cappella. Now, I remember Edie Reader and I talking about that at one point people would sing solo a cappella in a room with no piano, no guitar, and that was quite natural. I think it's same in Ireland in those days, and maybe even more in the country. So one could carry a tune. So I heard everything, really. But the main thing was when I was 10, the family moved south. With the buildings and the old industrial cities like Glasgow were bombed silly. They were ruined.
Right.
And so new houses were being put together in the south of England, and new estates were being built. And in the mid-50s, my family moved down to Hatfield, 20 miles north of London. And so then I brought all that up, that Gaelic storytelling and poetry, but down to England with me. And there in England, I met a lot of other people pouring out of those broken cities of Newcastle and Liverpool and Manchester, and from Ireland as well they came to these new towns, and these new town of Hatfield. But very quickly, I'd be attracted to the Bohemian world. But before that, it was Buddy Holly and the Everly Brothers. I'm a bit young for Elvis, but the radio now was happening and TV was happening, and there were pop TV shows. And I was a teenager, I mean, 13, 14, going to a mixed school with girls and boys. And so pop music of the early, late 50s and early 60s was a must. And I fell in love with Buddy Holly, who didn't, songwriters will tell you, from my generation. And even now, if they're smart, they'll listen to the way Buddy Holly put songs together and produce records. So the idea was to mix the two, to actually bring the meaningful lyrics of what poetry, music, theatre, revolutionary thought of the Irish, the Scots, and the Welsh. And you, if you want to, you can start counting, if you look back in history, just how many Welsh, Scots, and Irish are part of the 60s revolution of songwriting and making records. The Beatles are from Liverpool, but that's Irish, you know. And so very soon I'll be listening and to the pop music, but then mixing the pop music with with the new revolutionary ideas of Bohemia, how could we put, and Dylan was thinking it too, the Beatles were thinking it, people that were thinking about how to bring new radical ideas into popular entertainment, you have to invade the pop charts. And it's interesting because listening to the pop charts, I realized that millions of young people, that the only thing they were reading, Michael, was the back of cereal boxes at breakfast in the morning before they went to school.
Right.
There was no reading. There was no important television shows. There was. It was all just entertainment and, you know, cabaret and ventriloquists and comedians and things like that. And so Gypsy Dave and I, at 16, we left. We were influenced by listening now to the blues, to the jazz. I already had all the songs under my belt from the Irish and Scots tradition of the revolutionary days and all the beautiful ballads of the Gaelic tradition. I knew about all that. So then when I picked up the guitar, it all came out. I would remain acoustic. I would not form a band, but I'd play with other musicians. And Gypsy Dave and I hitchhiked away to the nearest Bohemian community we could find. It was jazz, it was blues, it was folk, it was meditation, it was interesting new wave films with Julie Christie and Courtney and all these new people that were arriving. So we took over popular culture really with these Bohemian ideas, and that was the 60s. Now the influences kept happening. One of the big ones was the meditation books that we were reading. George Harrison and I, the Beatles especially, would sit down and say, look, it's all very well sex, drugs and rock and roll and have a party whenever you can and making incredible music in the studio, but we've got to introduce to the world these ideas. Too much looking into the outer world, poisoning it, and factories and material and material world and industrial destruction. The people have got to look inside a bit more now. We've looked outside, we've controlled nature, we've invented science, but what happened to the planet? What happened to caring for each other? So rather than adopt a religion, we wanted to bring meditation in. That was a big influence. If we could go to, and we went to India, the Beatles and I, one Beach Boy, Mike Love, Paul Horn, a great jazz guy, we sat there and we learned it. We brought it back. We spread it around the world. And then even David Lynch and I met through TM. David Lynch, the great avant-garde filmmaker. I said to him over the last 5 years, we'll make some music. And we did. And we just had this extraordinary hit, I Am the Shaman. Yeah. And so David and I said, well, let's sell a vinyl of it and raise some money and teach a few people the TM. I said, look, can we teach the Cork students? Because that's where I live. And he said, that's what we'll do. So we've raised the fund. And so this influence of meditation on me and Linda and the Beatles, we turned it around and sent it out into the world. It's really needed a de-stress, you know. And so on Wednesday this week, I'm presenting Linda and I and the TM of Ireland. And TM is big in the celebrity world. We're presenting TM to the Crawford School of Art and Design. And David wanted, and I wanted particularly, to give TM free to any students of the art world in Cork. Because, you know, without the arts of music, literature, and poetry, there's nothing for the people really to learn. You can't just keep going to on the weekend just to dance. You've got to learn something.
Brilliant, Donovan. You mentioned the Beatles there. You ploughed your own path going solo throughout all those years. And yeah. I'm just wondering, when you found fame, it was, you know, to your solo performances. Whereas the Beatles, the Kinks, the Stones, the Yardbirds, they were all bands and groups, and they had all each other to kind of fall back on and share their emotions or whatever in the ups and downs. But you were solo. How is there a big difference between going solo and in a band in that shared experience?
Oh yeah, there is a big difference. When you're solo, you can't break up like a band. But you can maybe.
But like, I mean, in the ups and downs that happen on the road,
oh, yeah.
you had to manage through your own wits and.
Well, yes, because It was only me and Gypsy. When I married Linda, it was three of us. It's really, we could choose for ourselves. With a band, you have four people. You might have four mortgages, four managers, four lawsuits, 12 children to look after. It's difficult in a band, you know. But with a solo also, I prefer it, and I will be doing that in Sea Church. Sitting on the stage with one guitar, you can stop and start when you like. It's personal. It's quite traditional in the Welsh and Irish and Scottish tradition for the one man with the stringed instrument, you know. And it's where all the songs begin. One guitar, one voice. Even speaking to Jimmy Page, who, you know, invented the Led Zeppelin, he would play on my records. But I wasn't without musicians. I played with every, and continue to play with every great single musician in the world. I've worked with Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page and tons of other musicians. Like Jimmy said, when I said, Jimmy, when you write the songs for, when we're writing for Led Zeppelin or any big power guitar, you write the song on acoustic guitar, don't you? And he said, of course, how else? So, answer to your question, yeah, I survived because I just had the one guitar.
And by the way, I meant to ask you, you've a name for that guitar, hadn't it? I saw you play with a kind of a green guitar, and I think there was a reindeer image under it. Have you had a personal name for this?
Oh, yes. Her name's Kelly. She will be in Ballincotton. She will be performing. I had that guitar made, designed and styled on the Book of Kells in Trinity College. To thank Ireland in those days of when I made that guitar all those years ago. You know, it was 96, I think. I think it was 96. Kelly was made, and I didn't realize how much of a workhorse she would be. She was made by Danny Farrington out of Alabama and into Nashville and into LA. And Danny Farrington's made some guitars for all of the greats. And so Kelly also pioneered the making of continuing of making of custom-made guitars. So Kelly will be there.
Brilliant. Okay, I just like to do talk again, dear. When you went to the went east to India, I mean, you taught some chord structures and finger picking to John Lennon, and some of that music turned up on their later albums. How did that feel, knowing that you had influenced some of the songs for the Beatles? That must be awesome.
Well,
amazing.
Yeah, it's great. There was a lot of interchange anyway, listening to each other's music. They were a four-piece band, and I was a solo, like I said. But the only instrument you could bring to India was acoustic. So they, John, Paul, and George had acoustic guitars. Ringo had, when he arrived, George bought a tabla drum. But the guitar was the only thing there, acoustic guitar. And I was forever picking and playing in the sunshine and at night when we gathered in the ashram and all that. And John one day said, well, how do you do that? And what he meant was the picking. So I taught him this arcane form of the picking and chord structure or two. And he loved it. He said, this is great. It was like back being students again. And it was great to share that. I was sharing things that they had acoustic guitars, you know, when I was 16, and they called it skiffle. They were playing acoustic music once, but when they made the band, it was all pop. And so I took them back to the root. And George, the younger, George Harrison, he needed encouragement for songwriting because the shadow of Lennon and McCartney was so giant, the shadow of songwriters, that they were giants. And although they loved George, I don't think they took him aside and there was no time to show him any tricks. He kind of knew all the tricks, George, anyway, of pop. But he didn't know flamenco, folk, and the classical styles that I had, and certain secret blues picking things. So John loved it. Paul was left-handed, so in the ashram, he had a left-handed guitar, and he could sit down seriously and learn the picking. But he's genius, you know? So he was listening by ear, and he was walking around and picking it up. Now, it was a great joy to hear the songs that come out, you know, Blackbird, Dear Prudence, Mother Nature's Son, and George in particular, later. He took a certain style I gave him, not that I didn't give it to John and Poe, a certain descending pattern that George used to write this classic song he wrote called Something. And so it was fun. But that's what we did, sat around just like a bunch of Irish folk singers with the guitars and picking every day. And I shared a few things with them. And George said on the Beatles anthology, when John and Paul were saying, wasn't that a great album? We made that white album. And George said, hey, wait a minute, lad. Bond is all over the white album.
Right.
And that was great. He said that. It's great. It's great to share these things. And that's what it's about. You know, you've got to share and move things on. And the White Album is extraordinary, a beautiful song.
Well, you've certainly shared a lot, and your music, your lyrics, I mean, they're so well known, and I'm sure the folks in Ballycotton and the Sea Church are going to be in for an amazing night. You'll be delighted if they all join in and sing along or dance along, is that allowed these days post-pandemic now?
Oh yeah, they'll get what they know, but there are also a few things they don't, and that's the main thing. Thanks, Michael. This has been important, but to actually say thank you and say hello to a small area of Cork where Linda and I consider our home. Thanks, Michael.
Well, thank you very much. It's going to be a great concert. We're all looking forward to it. Thank you, Donovan. Thank you very much indeed.